May it please the court. Mr. Waters' base offense level was improperly increased based on the number of victims. T.W. and A.L. are not victims of the offense because they do not fall within the scope of relevant conduct to the offense that Mr. Waters pled guilty to, which was receipt of child pornography from May 2014 to August of 2014. To briefly recap, T.W. involved production that occurred in 2010, when both T.W. and Mr. Waters were 17 years old. Then there is later production of A.L., which occurred in 2013. Based off of this conduct, Mr. Waters was convicted of lascivious acts with a minor in 2013. After this conviction is when the conduct which formed the basis for the federal offense began, specifically in 2014. So for these two earlier victims to fall within the scope of relevant conduct, they must meet at least one of two definitions. First, the conduct must have occurred during the offense, commission of the offense, in preparation for that offense, or in the course of attempting to avoid responsibility or detection for that offense. If not that, solely with respect to offenses which require grouping for multiple counts, it would include all acts or omissions that were part of the same course of conduct or common scheme or plan. Turning to the first definition, the production involving TW and AL does not fall within this definition. It couldn't have been during the offense of conviction because TW occurred 4 years earlier in 2010, and AL again occurred a year earlier in 2013.
Do you agree this is plain error review on this one, or just, you say it is plain error, but in the reply brief, are you?
It's not a concession. There is an objection, and I would acknowledge that it is fairly vague in the objections to the PSR. Our position is, at the very least, it is plain error review, and that under plain error review, this was clearly error that requires reversal to the district court.
And I have that as a preface because the government argues that apparently the videos or whatever of these two victims was then continuously possessed by him through the offense period. And therefore, the government argues the production was in preparation for the continuing possession. What's your response under both error review and plain error review?
So the guideline at issue wasn't for a possession offense. And if it was for the guideline was for production because there was a cross-reference. He pled guilty to receipt. I think that would...
The offense was receipt.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. We're working on the cross-reference, it has to be in preparation for the receipt offense, right?
It would have to
From
be in...
your standpoint, I mean, you would favor that.
It would have to be in preparation for the receipt or the guideline which applies here, which is production. The reasons that TW and AL are being considered a victim and the guideline that Mr. Waters was sentenced under was a production offense. And looking at the plain language of the guideline notes themselves, it states, if the relevant conduct of an offense includes more than one minor being exploited. So the question is, when did that exploitation occur? When was the production and when did it take place? And does that production fall within the scope of relevant conduct to the offense that Mr. Waters pled guilty to, which is receipt of child pornography during that several-month period in 2014. So a later possession or continued possession of a production that occurred years earlier doesn't somehow bring in that earlier production to relevant conduct.
That's the question. You have a favorable case these child porn, they're being awfully heavily litigated all over the country.
There is no case exactly on point. The closest that I could find to specifically address that question, our position, of course, first is that it's clear from the plain language of the guidelines, which I've just cited, and that it requires that the exploitation occur during the relevant conduct. But the Don case out of the Seventh Circuit, there's a footnote where it discusses this length of time and whether that can be considered relevant conduct. But as far as an Eighth Circuit case directly on point with this exact argument, I was not able to find one, no.
Not even the Tenth Circuit? They seem to have a lot of long opinions on this.
I was not able to find one exactly on point, Your Honor, and I think it's because it's clear from the language of the guidelines itself. He is under the production guideline. Mr. Waters is being held responsible and being sentenced for production that occurred. That's a cross-reference that they were dealing with. So the relevant question is, when did that production occur? Does that production fall within the definition of relevant conduct? And clear, and here, it does not. And turning to the idea of in preparation, if he was being held responsible, and if TW and AL were considered victims because he possessed it, and if that's the reason that they were considered victims, that might be a different issue. But he's being held responsible, and these two minors are considered victims based off of the production conduct. So that the production occurred years earlier and is somehow in preparation for a later possession, he's not being held responsible for the possession. That's not why they're being counted as victims. So the in preparation for portion of the relevant conduct definition does not apply here. And I don't think it's in dispute, but I want to briefly address, it also does not fall within the second definition because it's clear that production offenses are not grouped. And that's the only way we get into whether something is within the same course of conduct or part of the common scheme or plan. If there are no further questions, I would reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Very well. Ms. Luxa, you
may proceed.
Good
morning again. May it please the court, counsel. It's the government's position that we aren't even looking at plain error review in this case because the argument about the base offense level being incorrectly calculated was waived. There was no mention of this issue in the objections to the PSR. Prior to sentencing, counsel filed a sentencing memorandum but did not object to the base offense level calculation. And at sentencing, counsel did not mention any issue with the base offense level calculation. In fact, he didn't object to the court's calculation at the sentencing hearing. So it wasn't even a situation where, oh, all of a sudden he recognizes that there's a problem and then he does object. That didn't happen. So I don't even think we're looking at a plain error standard because this issue was waived because it wasn't raised before the district court. While counsel did not address the prior conviction argument regarding Iowa lascivious acts with a minor, I would just say that the court has held that that does qualify for the enhancement because of under the Sonnenberg case and then Krebs, which was a more recent case. Counsel argues in her brief. I apologize, Your Honor. Yes. On the prior conviction argument, the enhancement for a prior conviction
52B.
Yes. I apologize, Your Honor. Lascivious acts with a minor. This court has already held in Sonnenberg that the Iowa statute qualifies. And in Krebs, this court, through Judge Colleton, rejected the argument that counsel is making in her brief that the Supreme Court in the Lockhart case somehow requires the court to rethink Sonnenberg. In fact, the judge Judge Colleton said in Krebs The Supreme Court in Lockhart, however, took no position on the meaning of the terms aggravated sexual abuse, and abusive sexual conduct. We see no warrant in Lockhart to reconsider Sonnenberg. So it's the government's position that pursuant to Sonnenberg and Krebs, Mr. Waters' prior conviction, Iowa conviction for lascivious acts, does qualify for the enhancement. If there are no further questions, I will conclude.
Yeah, this preparation, production to prepare for later, what to warrant the cross reference. What's the preparation? Articulate your position again in light of the argument that, well, it has to be preparation for production, not just continuing receipt slash possession, because the issue is the cross reference. That's what I think the opposing counsel is arguing.
Yes. It's the government's position that that is, in fact, relevant conduct. The court has held that relevant conduct includes activities that occur before the date identified by the indictment as the starting date of the offense. And the prior production facilitated the possession of the images years later in 2015. And I don't think that just because the cross-reference talks about production is necessarily dispositive, because when the guidelines are looking at, and it seems to me that the force of the guidelines in this area is looking at the multitude of victims. The commission seems to be very concerned about the number of victims relating to an increased sentence. And here we have two individuals. Granted, the production occurred earlier than the production in the indictment, but they're still victims. And I think that the guidelines are broad enough for this court to find that you can produce it, and if you later possess it, then that counts as relevant conduct.
Well, if that concludes your argument.
Yes, thank you.
What is your argument, Ms. Quick? I'm lost.
It is what Judge Loken articulated, in that these two victims are being held, are increasing Mr. Waters' adjusted offense level. They're being counted as victims because of production that occurred. We're dealing with that cross-reference to that guideline. And the question is whether that production falls within the definition of relevant conduct to the offense that Mr. Waters pled guilty to.
Right.
And the close... Oh, sorry.
We have your chart on page 12 of the time sequence. And so how do you understand the government's response? Maybe that's what I did not understand, and I don't know why you should have to explain it to me, but how do you explain the government's response to this specific argument?
I wasn't entirely clear, but I think it is kind of this idea that somehow, because there's continued possession of it, that somehow brings this earlier production into it. But our position, of course, is that doesn't have anything to do with whether it's in preparation for, and doesn't answer the question that's necessary to answer for this case, of whether it was in preparation for the conduct which he pled guilty to.
And that's the essential point. Was it in preparation for that?
Yes. Well, and our position is it was not. And discussing case law earlier, and I went back and looked at my brief, the closest case on point cited in the brief is the Wiener case out of the It's not out of this circuit. It's out of the Sixth Circuit. And that, again, dealt with exploitation and whether victims that were pre-charged conduct could qualify under the relevant conduct guidelines and could increase the defendant's offense level.
And that's a Wiener case out of the Sixth Circuit,
yes. And it is cited in the brief, right, but... Okay.
Unpublished, yeah, federal 518 Fed Appendix 358. Okay.
Yes. So there is case law that is on point, has addressed this issue of relevant conduct and how we calculate the guidelines when determining what counts as relevant conduct. And to briefly address again this question of waiver, while not conceding that there isn't error, the error wasn't preserved, the government's argument is it's a waiver because there's a failure to object. Well, if the court does find there was a failure to object, that's where the plain error rule comes in. Waiver occurs when there's an intentional relinquishment of a known argument or a known right. The idea that the failure to object somehow is an intentional relinquishment just is not supported by the case law. Generally, waiver is found where a defense counsel will stand up at sentencing and say, well, we're going to withdraw that objection. We're not going to challenge that anymore. Or if a defense counsel agrees to something in a plea agreement and then tries to come in at sentencing or on appeal and say, no, that's not right. We're actually objecting to that now. In those circumstances, that's when a waiver is found. Failure to object, which happens, that's why we have the plain error review, and that's when plain error review is appropriate.
And, well, the government set out its position on that point on, 9 and 10, so, well, very well.
If there are no further questions, we would ask that this court reverse and remand for resentencing.
Well, thank you for the argument. Madam Clerk, does that complete?